Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to this week's podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com, courtesy of the Iowa Clinic Men's Center, IAMenCenter.com. Love our friends at the Iowa Clinic Men's Center. I'll be paying them a visit next Tuesday, October 13th. My annual physical is coming up. I feel fine, Jeff Woody, but, you know, sometimes they can find stuff in your blood.
Your body is sneaky.
Yeah.
They can find that stuff.
So last year, I got my physical on a Monday. It was the Monday after Bloom's wedding. And I
what'd your blood work look like, Chris?
I'm not at Bloom's wedding. I drank 22 beers because I have my own case
in 6.5 minutes.
Well, it was over the course of like, it was probably from like noon till midnight and God knows however many champagnes and all that. But anyways, the blood work, I got like a concerned call a couple days after the physical. They're like, you really need to work on your diet and all this stuff. I'm like, I think that,
Can I come in like next week to like retest this?
I said, I think it may have been skewed a little bit, but
hopefully you're not that blitzed on Tuesday.
I shouldn't be, but I do have a wedding. Big Cyclone Fanatic supporter, Kim Pull and Heartland Finishes. He's getting married on Saturday.
So you're not, I mean, hopefully you come down well by Tuesday.
Having said that, I'm a different man now than I was when Bloom got married.
You have a responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that I'll be drinking 22 beers on Saturday night.
Cut that in half. We'll go 11.
Maybe 12.
11 or 12, a dozen.
The wedding reception I'm going to is actually at the Jacobson Building.
That'll be cool.
Yeah, it will be neat.
In like in Heartland Hall?
Yeah.
Down there? That'll be cool.
Because he built Heartland Hall. Heartland Finishes. Get the tie. Yeah.
Ah.
Yep.
That makes sense.
So that'll be cool. Hopefully the Clones beat Texas Tech and it'll be a real nice party.
That would be a nice party.
We'll see. I think they might.
I said this on, I do a show on MediaCom every week with BJ Shaban.
Okay.
And I picked Iowa State outright. And it was just a heads up pick, not a pick on the spread. And I took Iowa State outright on the show, and I'll kind of stand by that, and we can kind of get into the reasons why later. But because of the circumstances of both teams and how this game kind of is trending for both sides, I'm going to take Iowa State outright in a real, I don't want to call it a shootout because I don't think like 34 to 31 constitutes a shootout, but something in the low to mid 30s neighborhood.
I see this game playing out a little bit like Texas last year.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, take away the defensive touchdowns from last year in the Texas game. It's like 37 to 36 or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can see
Let's just start there, Jeff, because, I mean, listen, the Kansas win is what it is. They did what they needed. They did what they had to do. They did what they were supposed to do.
And Kansas is awful.
Yeah, and Kansas is really bad. So, I don't know, like, how much exactly you can take from it. Other than, hey, you tip your cap to him. He said, you guys took care of business. Great. It's time to move on.
Also, side note about Kansas. I have I work at a gym, and one of the members of the gym is a Hawkeye fan. He's been a Hawkeye fan for like 30 years, but he's one of those reasonable Hawkeye fans that'll like talk to you and be like, yeah, Iowa didn't play that well, and Iowa State looked good. Like one of those like reason, because he went to Iowa.
Okay.
And
had to get that dig in
had
there.
Had to get that. Hey, Kirkwood. But he was saying he went to the Iowa State game because he didn't get tickets to Wisconsin. And he was like, he came in and he goes, we were prefacing it the week before about how bad Kansas was. And Bob comes in and he goes, you're right. I was there. I've been watching football for 35 years. And that is the worst team I think I've ever seen play in a Big 12 stadium. And that's coming from an unbiased, non-Big 12 fan.
I agree. I think I tweeted that in the third quarter. And I kind of went through it at halftime. And just so you know, well, you were sitting with me. Like,
yeah.
How pissed was I like at the beginning
very
of the
start
second
quarter?
Oh, my. I was so angry with how the guys came out. Like, it just, to me, there's no excuse to be that flat. And I think they were, I mean, defensively, they got caught with their pants down there. They should have been losing at the beginning. But then, you know, and we kept talking the whole first quarter, second quarter. We knew that eventually
they'd turn it on.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the talent discrepancy between the two was just so obvious. But I don't even know where I was going with this. But they, you know, they took care of business at the end. I can't kill them for a 25-point win.
Yeah.
But Kansas was the worst team. I asked a bunch of old-timers at halftime about those old Baylor teams.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I thought those old Baylor teams would beat that Kansas team, and most people agree with me.
Yeah. Well, it might be the latest greatest, but still, it was left a lot to be desired. But what I take away from the game, and I did kind of give this example, but I didn't have a lot of time because it's on radio and everything is time capped. The examples of how Iowa State did take care of business, but Kansas being terrible helped that. Iowa State doing really good things. Like the keynote example that comes to my mind is that 62-yard run by Mike Warren. What the defensive front for Kansas, they were everyone that was responsible for a defensive gap was inside the box, except the person that was responsible for the C gap, meaning outside of the tackle, was a Sam linebacker in space. And that's not uncommon. A lot of times they'll put a Sam linebacker in space. It's like Levi. A lot of times Levi's kind of in space, but he has a run gap inside the box. So if he sees run action, he's got to run straight to that gap, because if he doesn't, then there's a huge gaping hole. So what Iowa State did well on that play, they did very, very well. The front, I think there was a five-man box, the safety that was kind of rolled down. And the offensive line captured all the linemen. They had a stunt. They were slanting to that side. And the offensive lineman captured the stunt and pushed it all to the side that they were intending to block it to. So great job by the offensive line. Mike, with his track, I've talked about this, how running backs have to work for the offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Mike's track influenced so hard. He influenced the second and third level so hard. The safety, who was kind of at about 9 yards, so a little bit shallower than he normally plays, ran straight to play contain on the outside, on the other side of the line of scrimmage. So he was trying to make sure that Mike didn't get outside because of how hard Mike pressed the line of scrimmage. So he moved the safety, he moved the linebackers with his track, and the offensive line moved the rest of the box. Now, where Kansas being terrible comes in is the backside linebacker, who's supposed to be responsible to run straight to the tackle for a run fit, ran straight up the field. He's 8 yards off the ball. He runs directly north and south. So there is an 8-yard wide hole because this guy didn't close it down.
Yeah.
And Mike did his job in moving everyone out of the way. That guy didn't do his job, so it cleared out the other side, and then he just ran straight up the field.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can take away from it is that Iowa State is doing good things. But you also can kind of chalk up a little bit of it to Kansas being awful. Like,
oh yeah,
that guy done his job, it's still a 9-10-yard run. It's not 62.
Yeah. That makes sense. Nonetheless, I mean, Mike Warren, he's not a fluke.
No, we were sitting in this spot. Sometimes we do podcasts at Chris's house. Yeah, sometimes we do podcasts in the office.
We're at the office today. We decided to be professional.
I was sitting in this spot in June and called it.
You did?
That Mike is going to be the starter midseason and was going to be an all-time great at Iowa State.
Give him a couple of games is what you said.
Yep. He's still got learning to do. Don't get me wrong.
I know. Because you know what I'm impressed with him, though? Like, I probably put too much stock into this, but he's really good, like, when the media is asking him questions. Like, the kid, you can just tell there's a lot up there.
He's a smart kid.
He knows, he credits the offensive line. You know what I mean? He's very humble. I like Mike Warren.
And even before he started playing well, talking to, like, the strength staff there, they said like when you ask, like, so which one of these, I always like to do this with like the incoming freshman class of like when they first get there, like Alan Lazard was one, Joel Lanning was one of guys that just work hard. You tell them to run 10 yards, they're going to run 12. You tell them to do 8 reps, they're going to do 9.
It's kind of like me at Jack Whitford's CrossFit.
Exactly.
I did the extra pull-ups.
Getting yoked, bro.
What does that even mean?
Swole.
Carry AF. On.
Anyway, carry so on. You're just asking about this recruiting class, and you're like, I asked Brett Bucher's my guy that I go to talk to because he works a lot with the freshmen. And I go, so Brett, which one of these guys stands out? And he goes, that Warren kid. The kid just works hard all the time. And he's a smart dude. You can tell in interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk to him in general. I do this a lot with people. It's like when you're having a conversation, you look someone in the eye, like you can tell if there's something going on behind their eyeballs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Mike's got stuff going on behind his eyeballs. You talk to, we had a guy on our team like Ronnie Nelson back in the day.
Old Ronnie,
third down Ronnie. Like you look at Ronnie.
He got
like,
some sacks.
There's not a lot going on behind those eyes. So like you can tell that he's a smart dude.
it'll be fun to watch him. So let's move on to Texas Tech with that, because, you know, I feel like I'm kind of like you, Jeff. I don't see if Iowa State wins this game, they're not going to beat them 55-53 like TCU did. This has got to be a deal, like a ball control type deal for Iowa State. Mm-hmm. You force some turnovers. You know, you take advantage of Tech's injuries. And Mike Warren's got to be a part of that. I mean, if Iowa State wins on Saturday, I mean, he's got to be 150-plus yards,
and
right?
He's got to be a part of every game from here on out. I mean, because the identity of the offense, Sam is not a drop-back passer. He can't be Bryce Petty. He can't. He's not capable of doing it.
Yeah.
But he is capable of being a pretty good play-action quarterback. I mean, if you give him the option, like he – to run the offense that they ran on Saturday – and again, yes, it's Kansas, and yes, it's not the best opponent, and sometimes they're out of place. However, with giving him the option of running himself, handing to the running back, or throwing, give him all of those options, then he's going to find the best option to do that with. If you force him to do a drop back pass, and you only say, basically, you have to throw it down the field, and you don't have any other option, then that's where Sam starts to run into trouble.
Yeah.
So if Iowa State's going to be successful in any of the games down the road, the running game has to be huge. And I think Tyler Brown's hamstring is what's holding him back a little bit, where he has a tweaked hamstring, which doesn't allow you. And we talked about this on Monday with LaShawn Daniels and his ankle.
Yeah.
Difference with an ankle and a hamstring is a soft tissue injury. So it could be fine for like 3 days, and then you go to open up and like sprint, and you re-injure it, and you're set back a week and a half. So it's one of those things where it could be 8 days, or it could be 5 months. So,
what do you think about the running back subs? And that gives us some good perspective on Brown, who Paul Rhodes swears is completely healthy. But
sure he is.
It drives me nuts when they. I think Joshua Thomas will be a fine running back for Iowa State, but I don't understand the third down. Like some of the subbing we've seen with the running back. I didn't understand it against Northern Iowa. The longer we've gone throughout the season, I just don't get how and why they are subbing running backs.
I get kind of why you do it. Kind of. But not how they've been doing it. So I think, again, in Kansas, in the second half of the Kansas game, it wasn't subbing. It was number two is running the ball.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's
all. But when the offense was stalling in the first half,
it's because you trade running backs.
Yeah.
So the reason why you do this is because we talk about, you know, again, to go back to that conversation we had on the radio on Monday, the difference between LaShawn Daniels and Jordan Kinzeri is that right now, Jordan Kinzeri is able to put his foot in the ground at 100% and or at, you know, 0 to 60 at 100% capacity. He can take one step and get there. LaShawn Daniels with his ankle, Tyler Brown with a hamstring, cannot right now get 0 to 60 where you need him to. The same effect happens if a running back is tired. If he is fatigued, he can't go 0 to 60 in one step. Well, the defense isn't going to slow down just because the running back's tired. So there is an emphasis at some point that you have to get another running back in there to give that running back a little bit of rest so that he can continue to run at full speed. However, the timing in which you do that, it plays odd to me. Like, Mike is a guy that can run everything you want him to run because he understands. I've talked about this in past podcasts, and he understands the scheme of what plays are going to do. He's a smart dude. He understands where he has to move guys, where his linemen are going to be, where everything's going to have to play out. Josh doesn't get that yet because he's the thing with like, yeah, Mike's a freshman. Josh's a freshman. Yeah, Mike is an exception. Like, that's the thing. Like, Leonard Fournette is an exception. Guys like that don't just appear all the time. They happen once in a great while.
You're putting Warren in that type of a category.
I'm just saying.
Well, I know you're not comparing him to Leonard Fournette, but you're saying for Iowa State, this kid's special.
For Iowa State, right. He's special. It's not something that there are very, very few freshmen that can just pick up information.
And he's a redshirt freshman.
And he's a redshirt
freshman. Josh Thomas is a true freshman.
Right. So Josh is going to be fine. I mean, the kid.
I think you see glimpses. He could be a nice running back.
He's going to be a good back. But as of right now, he doesn't quite get it. So he's not able to go at full speed yet because he's still thinking.
Yeah.
And with a running back like that, you can't run everything. You can't run the whole gamut of the playbook because there are certain plays, like an inside zone play is like there's like two thoughts that you have to have. You're like looking at the last down or a down lineman in one specific spot. I'm looking at a linebacker. Everything else is going to be taken care of. I'm just going to react to that one thing. And that's it. There are certain plays like stretch plays or like sweep plays where there's a lot more that you have to make sure you understand. So plays like those sweep plays aren't really going to work with Josh because he's thinking too much instead of reacting. And so when you if you were to pull or put him in, you're cutting down your playbook that you really are able to run.
Mm-hmm.
So putting him in crucial down and distance situations seems to be a bit of a missed opportunity
so
for him.
Basically, we're coming to the conclusion that Tyler Brown has to be worse than they're telling us.
That's what I would go with, because he played too well in the first few games for him not to have that happen.
Doesn't make any sense.
I'm going to say that it's coach speak that Tyler – same reason Cliff Kingsbury said, Pat Mahomes, he'll be at 100%. My ass, he's going to be at 100%.
Yeah, no,
I've been around a quarterback that's got 18 injuries at the same time, and it was actually against Texas Tech with Sam.
Yeah.
And he's got, had that moped that hit him, or he was hit on his moped.
Allegedly.
I was in the facility when he and Darian came in, and DC was like, bro, we just got hit by some girl on a moped in the side ride lot. Like, dead serious. I'm like, oh my God. That's why you don't ride mopeds.
The life and times of Iowa State football.
What was that Hawkeye player that flipped over the car?
That was Ott. Drew Ott.
Oh, Ott flipped over the car?
Yeah. That was Drew Ott.
That's why you don't ride mopeds.
That was Drew Ott, and then he played the next week. Drew Ott's insane. I love that guy.
Eats raw eggs.
He's insane. He's their Levi Peters.
He rode his moped from Iowa City on back roads all the way to Nebraska to pick up his truck. Did you know that?
Drew Ott did?
Drew Ott did.
That's fantastic.
He rode his moped. Is he from Kearney?
I don't know.
Somewhere around Kearney, Nebraska.
I have no
he
idea.
He rode his moped from Iowa City 15 hours, like Dumb and Dumber style, back to Nebraska to pick up his truck so he could drive his truck back, because apparently somebody couldn't get his truck to Iowa City.
That's great.
He is Levi Peters.
He's their Levi Peters. I love it. Okay, well, let's talk about tight ends. It's a big story. Apparently, that's all they wanted to talk about at media availability on Tuesday night.
Woo, three receptions. Woo!
Well, what are the – okay, I don't really give a damn about the three receptions. I don't think that means anything, personally. Well, what are they doing differently with the tight ends, in your opinion?
They're running the ball, and then because you run the ball, you have the option to throw to tight ends.
That's what it is.
Because
that's the thing. Like, I went back and watched it again, and I'm like, they're not really doing a lot different
they're
with
not.
These guys. Like, why is it such a big deal now?
It's – like I said, the offense has an identity, and that identity is running the football. And if they can run the football effectively, again, to rehash some of the stuff we went over on the Monday KXNO program, if you can effectively run the ball, you make the defense keep the people out there that you want out there. Against a spread offense, you want as many linebackers on the field as many linebackers and defensive linemen on the field as you can, because that gives you favorable matchups to throw the ball.
Yeah.
If you can't run the ball, like Iowa State was unable to do all of last year, except the Texas game, but against all of last year, you give the defense the option of putting in a nickel package and still being able to stop the run, which takes away your favorable matchups in the passing game. So what this running game has allowed Iowa State to do is force the matchups on defense that they want. Now that you've got matchups on defense and you have linebackers in on the field, they all have run fits that they're responsible for. So they say an outside linebacker, like take that example of that Mike touchdown run. That linebacker who's playing over the second receiver on the outside is responsible for a run gap.
Mm-hmm.
He's not – that's option – primary option number one is run fits. You have to watch for a run fit. Option two is then to cover whatever your coverage is, whether it's a zone or a man, whatever your defense you're playing. So if you can run the ball effectively, you are going to keep a slower athlete, because corners are faster than linebackers – you're going to keep a slower athlete on the field, and you're also going to keep his eyes in the backfield. Tight ends are going to be matched up against those guys, so if you can keep their eyes in the backfield and slip someone out away from that, whether you play action or not, you're going to have to keep their eyes honest. Then you give your tight ends or your tight ends or say a fullback or something like that an extra step and a half. And a step and a half, when you have a quarterback that is as accurate as Sam is, then you're able to exploit those matchups like they did with Bosen and Chandler on Saturday to get them big gains, whether it was 20, 12, or 7. You're getting big opportunities, and they're easy yards because the linebackers are more responsible for run game than they are for the passing game.
You kind of stole my thunder to start this podcast, but I'm in agreeance with you. Agreeance isn't a word.
Agreement?
Yeah. I will agree with you. I think Iowa State will beat Texas Tech. I kind of hinted around on my Monday musings. I think that – so it's really easy for folks to just sit there and go, well, look what they did against TCU. And I agree. They were fantastic. They had a great win at Arkansas. Even though Arkansas struggled, I'm still calling that a great win for Texas Tech's program. It's a great win. This is a team at Arkansas, a brutal, emotional loss at home to TCU. You get steamrolled by Baylor.
Yeah.
You're down three of your top four receivers. Your quarterback's, what, 50, 60%?
Yeah, he's...
And you're down an offensive lineman.
He is Sam in 2013. That is what Pat Mahomes is right now.
So then you factor all that, and Texas Tech, I mean, listen, they gave up like 600-some yards to Sam Houston State.
They gave up 550 to Arkansas.
Yes.
Arkansas, we've seen that they're not a good offense.
I think this sets up very well for Iowa State.
I agree. And provided that they don't overthink themselves. You have an opportunity, and like we said, they've given up a ton of yards, and they are statistically the worst run defense in the NCAA.
Now, granted,
caveat, they played Baylor and TCU back to back.
So I think that number is skewed.
So maybe they're 80th.
Yeah, I don't know what they are, but for me to like really reference the 127th ranking.
But still,
I think you have to put the note of who they play.
Still. Prior to that, they played...
That's what I look at. Prior to that, it's not any better.
Arkansas, Sam Houston State, and there was one other
UTEP.
One. UTEP.
UTEP ran for 220 or whatever.
Right. And you look at the opportunity that Iowa State has, whether it's Brown, whether it's Warren, hopefully it's mostly Mike, but whether it's Mike or Tyler or Josh or Trevor Ryan or whomever it may be.
Harger.
Mitch Hargs. My baby Hargs.
It's your boy.
Low to the ground, high effort, high motor.
Oh, he's a white running back.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay.
But whether it's whomever is in the game in the backfield, you've got an opportunity to run the ball and run the ball effectively. And like we've seen, that is when the offense is clicking. That's when they're doing the right things. If for whatever reason the offensive staff or whether it's a quarterback's coach or even Sammy, whomever it may be, if they start to overthink it and go, yeah, we could run the ball, but we like our matchup of DeVario versus this second corner. So we're going to try and exploit that with drop back passes on first down. If they overthink themselves to try and take a matchup that's good, but not as efficient as a run game would be, if they try and overthink themselves, then this game isn't going to go the way Iowa State wants. But if, as I expect them to do, because Mark Mangino has been coaching for 400 years, to do the things that you're given, then they're going to have a very good chance to win this game.
I think the defense needs to create a few turnovers.
And Dale has to make Mahomes uncomfortable. Dale and Jay Jones and the whole front has to make...
Well, it's DeMond Tucker's world.
Yes.
In my opinion.
Yeah. Which... It's a guard that's out, right?
Yeah, it's their left guard.
Ooh.
Mm. Left guard's out. And he's a multiple-year starter, too, I believe.
LaRaven's still in, right?
Yeah, he's still there. It's
so
like
that's
Thomas? Is there a Thomas?
I don't remember. I just remember seeing offensive lineman injured.
Their left guard is out.
Yeah. LaRaven Clark is a real, real good, which is a great LaRaven.
Is a good name.
He'll be going up against Dale. That'll be a fun matchup to watch. But, I mean, regardless, DeMond Tucker is going to be going up against a backup guard. I mean, that sets up well.
It's funny we're talking D-line because, to me, Jeff, the most interesting thing about this game is the 3-4 defense. I mean, we talked with Paul Rhodes earlier in the week about this. I mean, a game like this is basically why they made the switch.
Yeah.
I want to see how it works.
Which this is going to be really cool. And for the listeners, why this is a better defense versus a spread offense, specifically a quick passing spread offense, is because there is so much more you can do with the options you have. And Jake talked about it when he called in, I think, was it last week with Rob and Stansberry?
Yeah, the Cyclone Fanatic radio show, yeah.
And what the 3-4 allows you to do, a 4-3 is pretty much a straight-up gap scheme. Like, the defensive ends are outside the tackles, they stay outside the tackles. The defensive tackle is right just off the center, he stays in that gap. The 3 technique is just outside the guard, and he stays in that gap. It's pretty much straight-ahead rushing. So, as a quarterback, you look at that and go, okay, I know that 1, 2, 3, 4, you guys are in the right spots. Yes, there may be blitzers, there may be some other guys running around, but it's more, I have 4 guys that I know what they're going to do. With 3-4, there is so much confusion that can happen because defensive linemen can twist, stunt, drop back, cross over, or play straight up. And then most of the time you're going to bring 4 at least to the quarterback, meaning I'm going to send a linebacker from somewhere. Mm-hmm. I've got four options that I could send a linebacker to. So if there's a quick passing game, I could bring two linebackers and drop Dale Pearson. Or I could bring one linebacker and send Levi Peters off the corner and bring and twist my defensive line away from that. There are so many more options that it makes it harder to get rid of the ball quickly because you're not 100% sure that there's not going to be a guy there. So this defense is going to allow for a lot more confusion, specifically if you can get pressure on the quarterback. So if Mahomes wants to throw the ball quickly but isn't 100% sure and he can hold on to it for a little bit longer and wait for somebody to come open once the coverage is revealed, then the defense loses its advantage. But if I want him to throw the ball quickly and then I get pressure on him.
Which everything they do is designed for that.
Right. Right. I want him to throw the ball quickly.
All three-step drops.
Yeah. They're never going to drop back quite a bit unless they have a play action that they're looking for a bomb.
Yeah.
But if I want him to throw the ball quickly and keep my defense still pretty hidden, and then I get Dale, DeMond, Trent, Jay Jones, whomever, to him right away, and you force him to throw the ball, and he's not 100% sure where the defense is, it's going to lead to turnovers. It's going to lead to incomplete passes. It's going to lead to sacks if he's not comfortable. He's just going to eat the ball. So this defense is built because it can cause a lot more confusion as to where guys are going to be. And I, like you, I'm really excited to see how this is going to work because the next three offenses are all set up the same way. They just get to it in a slightly different fashion.
What about stopping the run against an air raid like this? Because I guess that's what I'm interested in. People think, you think Texas Tech, Baylor, TCU, what they're trying to do, and you automatically think, oh, they're throwing it 70 times a game. Well, it's not really accurate, though.
Shock Linwood ran for 250, didn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, Baylor has been the top rushing team in the league the last couple of years, I want to say.
Mm-hmm. And what a spread offense does is specific. I mean, Baylor's the best example of it because they do it better than anybody else.
Yeah.
Is they get wide receivers and they put them all the way out in the hashes. Because of the threat that they have in the passing game, you have to account at least one man for one receiver. Probably you have to go 3-over-2. So that means you pull six guys to their wide receivers.
Which a quick point to anybody who's ever stood in the middle of a football field, the quarterback accuracy when you've got guys spread out that wide is incredible.
It is. Especially when you have to throw it down the field.
Yeah, it's incredible. If you're listening to this, imagine because Baylor's – does anybody do the spread like Baylor does where they're on the literally lined up?
Oregon did last year with Mariota.
Okay.
But they're not doing it this year.
Is Baylor doing it with Seth Russell? I didn't watch close enough in that game. I was at a bar.
Baylor's offense is the same as it has been since Archie.
Well, I mean, just imagine that though, listeners, if you're standing in the middle of a football field and you're a quarterback and you've got a wide receiver on the out of bounds line to your right and to your left.
And that is so the field is 52.5 yards wide, which is about 160 feet. So a guy is 80 feet away from you, and you have to throw an oblong-shaped object exactly to him in the spot if he doesn't move anywhere.
That's crazy to me. That's why, like, when people call the Baylor guys system quarterbacks, well, maybe, but it still takes an incredible amount of skill to do what they do.
But anyway.
Yeah, sorry.
That's
point that I've wanted to make for a long time, though, with Baylor.
It is.
It is incredible.
Yeah, it's just one of those like little mathematical oddities that, like, if you look at it, you're like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Like, think about how, kicking. Like, think of how mathematically difficult kicking is to do.
Yeah.
Or golf.
With the shape of
baseball.
Yeah.
Because the degree of difficulty is so small that we expect a kicker or a baseball player or a golfer to do everything perfectly. And if you're off, like, a fraction of a degree, it changes it from being made to being missed.
Yeah, and I don't, this isn't even a critique of Sam Richardson. Like, does he have the arm strength to make those throws consistently? I mean, if he's in Baylor's system, like, I don't know. Like, I'm not.
If he's got 3 years of coaching, I think he's got the arm talent to do it, but I don't know if he's got.
Yeah, if you just threw him in there right now, it'd be a hell of a difficult thing to do.
It would be. It would be.
And it's not a critique of Sam. It's just my point is I'm building up what Baylor's doing. That's what makes it so difficult.
You and Art, man.
God, I love the guy. I wish he wouldn't have done the sexual assault.
Well,
allegedly.
He didn't do
well,
the
I know,
sexual
but
assault.
He let the guy on campus.
True.
I wish he would have done that because we had such a great relationship until then.
He was going to come over for Thanksgiving.
There were talks if we had a boy.
He was going to be named Art Tholomew. Bartholomew Kendall Williams.
There were thoughts of this. It wasn't. It was just going to be Art.
Art Tholomew.
Art Williams. But anyways.
Art Class Williams.
Where were we?
Anyway, we were talking about spread systems.
Yeah, we were just talking about it. Oh, we got in trouble last week because we left Rich Rod off of our...
Oh, true.
Mount Rushmore
true.
Of spreads.
With the Pat White offense. Yeah. That's on us.
Yeah.
My bad, guys.
That's our fault.
Good catch.
June Jones, we left him off.
Yeah.
There were some other guys, like the real football geeks came up with some names. But I think we were
Are we talking about Holland?
No.
Real football geeks?
He's a basketball geek.
That's true. But anyway, spread offenses. The reason why spread offenses are so...
I was talking about the difficulty of stopping the run.
Difficulty of stopping the run, the spread offenses, we were talking about, you have to play... On defense, you have to play basically 3-on-2 to your wide receivers to prevent the deep threat. So that takes six guys, or three guys to one side, three guys to the other side. So the middle of your field only... The middle of the field only has five dudes. What Baylor does is they just get these enormous offensive linemen and they just move as a herd and just push people out of the way and then get a one-on-one opportunity for their running back to make a linebacker miss. And then because of the running game, the safeties are so wide, by the time the safeties get there, they're already 12 yards down the field. So stopping the run against this, it's crucial that this defense can also confuse the offensive line to cause penetration of missed blocks. Also to get penetration with, you know, DeMond Tucker and Dale just doing what they do and beating blocks off the way. Because in an offense like that, you must account for the spread. You have to account for the wide receiver. So you have to take a few guys out of the box. So if you take guys out of the box, you open up space. You have to get that running game stopped before it gets started and contain it before they get into that open field that is naturally created by the spread system. So with a running game, to stop that, you've got to cease it before it starts moving.
You want to look ahead to this week's games?
Sure.
So we're both on record picking Iowa State.
I will take Iowa State in like a 34-31, and the way they're going to have to do it is make Texas Tech match them score for score, but not score for score in a Baylor sense, score for score in a Bill Snyder sense, where you're going to take...
That's funny, because Bloom's column that has not been posted yet is all about mimicking Kansas State.
Yeah, you have to take 38 minutes of game clock, and you put 31 points on the board, fine. Like, that should be good, you know, 31, 38 points, whatever it is. And that should be good enough to put pressure on Texas Tech, especially if you get a couple turnovers, that they have to match you score for score, but they've got a third of the time to do it. So they have it's forcing them to press, which is why Kansas State frustrates the hell out of a Baylor every year, because they take so much time off the clock. Baylor doesn't have that luxury of slowing down. It means they have to go fast. They can't not go fast. When they want to change tempo from third to fifth gear, they can't go from fifth down to third. They have to stay in high gear.
It's like if Rey Mysterio Jr. were to go up against Andre the Giant. Like, Rey Mysterio can't...
I have no idea who Rey Mysterio is.
He can't beat Andre the Giant by going power for power. He's got to use his speed and hit him low. He's got to chop away at the Giant. And if Iowa State tries to go score for score with these teams, they're just going to lose.
I appreciate the effort, but I don't...
Though the wrestling fans out there, they get it.
I don't understand the Rey Mysterio reference.
Google him. He's like 5'3". SMU is at Houston on Thursday night. That'll be
fun.
Did
you see what Houston did in the hall? What Herman did in the hallways?
What now?
He taped SMU jerseys on the floor, so they literally walked over them. Literally taped SMU jerseys on the floor of Houston's football facility. Herman did this. So he physically, the players walked over the SMU jerseys.
He's making a lot of noise.
Making a lot of noise down there. And guess what? They haven't lost a football game.
No, they're undefeated.
Yep.
With some good wins.
Yeah. They haven't lost a football game yet.
Well, they're going to kill. That'll be fun. I'm.
They're
going to
beat SMU by 170 points.
I'm going to DVR that, and I'm going to watch the whole damn thing on Thursday night. I'm going to, when I get home from the radio show, I'm more interested in that than I am Washington at USC. That'll be a nice game too. But Tom Herman, I'm a Tom Herman fan. If you guys can't tell, let's look at the Big 12. Sneaky good games this week. This is your classic Big 12 weekend where it's like the parity in the conference is really going to show, I think. So we've already talked Iowa State, Texas Tech. The Red River Shootout. I mean, nobody's picking Texas.
So the Red River Shootout. Here's the thing that I'm gonna I want to say about this. You remember not last time, but when Garrett Gilbert was the quarterback at Texas, and Oklahoma was heavily favored with Landry Jones, and all of a sudden Texas beat Oklahoma, and Texas ended up only going like 7-5 that year, but it like derailed Oklahoma's like, you know, their national championship favorites. Either Landry Jones or it was either Garrett Gilbert or right after Garrett Gilbert. But anyway, this has a shot because of how big the rivalry is to kind of galvanize the Longhorn team to put them together. Or if they, so say it galvanized the team and they have a pretty competitive game. I'd still take Oklahoma, but it'd be really close and it's a, you know, then Oklahoma or Texas starts to right the ship. Or Oklahoma puts two touchdowns early on the board and Texas who is already fighting with each other. You think if it's like Sterling Shepard breaks loose and goes uncovered for a touchdown because there's a blown coverage, there's not going to be a fist fight on the sidelines in that secondary? The secondary is already sniping, subtweeting each other on Twitter. Like, they don't like each other.
It's embarrassing.
So now, Oklahoma, their rival, starts to, if they put a couple touchdowns early on the board, Texas could start fighting each other, and this game ends up like 63-10. Like, an obliteration. It's either going to be really, really close, or Oklahoma wins by 100.
I would bet Oklahoma winning by 100.
I'm going to say that too, because I think as soon as, I mean, Baker Mayfield, Brett Favre Jr. is.
Well, I've just seen nothing out of Texas this week that makes me think they're going to. Hey, if you want to go to the Baylor-Kansas game, you can get tickets for
$0.10.
$9 right now. That's what I'm looking at.
And that's in Lawrence. And
Baylor's a 45-point favorite.
I haven't seen that line.
Honestly, if Iowa State had a bye week, I'd totally drive down and go to that game.
45 points?
They opened it at 38.
What's the over-under?
I'll look it up.
I want to see what the projected score for that game is if they're 45-point favorites.
Give me a
On
second.
The road, at home.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I mean, when was the last time a home Power 5 team was a 45-point dog?
Oklahoma's now a 17-point favorite. That line has moved four points.
And I think it's probably going to continue to go up.
Baylor-Kansas. It started, I know it opened at 38. Okay, it's now, they've dropped to a 44-point favorite.
Good Lord.
And the over-under is 77.
77 with a 44.5 favorite.
I'd take
the
under.
So that's like 65-14-ish.
There's no way that Kansas, well, that's interesting.
It's like 60, what you said, over under was 77?
Yeah.
So, yeah, like 60-something to a teen.
Yeah, 44 points.
That's amazing.
I would still take Baylor to cover.
That is amazing.
If you were to ask me, like, who would you bet? If
yeah,
you
no, I would bet, I mean, I wouldn't bet on Baylor because that point spread is enormous. Because just
we just know, talked about how Kansas is the worst Big 12 team we've ever seen.
Kansas is awful, but say Art pulls off the throttle because he doesn't want to get Shock Linwood hurt.
Art doesn't pull off the throttle. I think we've all learned this by now.
That's true.
Some bitch keeps it down. I love it.
My goodness. I want to see.
I would love to drive down to that game and watch it.
Kirk Holland, if you're listening to this, I want to know the last time a home Big 12 or home Power 5 team was a 40-plus point underdog.
I would guess that it's probably never happened.
I would guess that it probably hasn't either.
But I don't know that.
That seems startling to me. If I'm a okay, so we
just
were,
in case he's not listening, I'm going to tweet at him right now.
We were 31.5 point underdogs when we went to Waco. We ended up getting obliterated by 60, but we were 31.5
point
dogs.
That was the worst Cyclone reaction ever.
That was the worst game I've ever played, and I wanted to be done at halftime because we were down by 38. But that. Seeing that you're a 31-point underdog, it's like a shot to your manhood. Like, you are so much worse than this other team that they're going to beat you by more points than you score. Now, that line is now two touchdowns higher for Kansas. Like, I can't imagine what that feels like, how demoralizing and humiliating that would be to be, I mean, just a Kansas Jayhawk player. in general.
Dude, I've said this numerous times. I felt sorry for them last week. I think I told you that in the press box. Like, I genuinely wanted to go down and give them a round of applause for playing, for just participating. I will give them a participation ribbon.
I wouldn't, because they stopped trying.
Kansas did?
Yeah. The coaching staff did too. Like, the coach, we talk, I mean,
what the hell was David Beatty doing by punting in that one situation?
They're on the 36-yard line. That's a 52-yard field goal if you kick it from there. Yeah. And they punt it.
Well, because I praised David Beatty a lot last week, but that gutless decision really bothered me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know if I'm as high on
that. That's what
he's
talking about. The Kansas coaching staff quit. They punted on the 26 or the 36-yard line. It was 3rd and 11. You have a 3rd and 11 call. Hell, let Cozart drop back and let Cozart run a little bit. It's 3rd and 11. You know what they ran? Inside zone. They punted on 3rd down. Like, the Kansas coaching staff quit on the players, and the players quit on the coaching staff. Like, it is, if it was one thing where, like, just the players were starting to cash out, like Iowa State did last year against Kansas, like, the players started to cash out. Like, that bothers me, but that's a quick, I mean, that's an easy fix, because you can get in a fight in the locker room and say, you know, you want to quit? Get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
If the coaching staff quits on the players, what leverage do the players have against that coaching staff? Nothing. They can't do a damn thing that they're punting on the 36-yard line.
15-yard net punt or
yeah, it's a 16-yard net punt because it goes in the end zone. It goes in the end zone.
That didn't make any sense.
That actually, like you can kind of sense the emotion of my voice. Like, yeah, that's really frustrating to me, because if a coaching staff quits on a team in that game,
my stock in Dave Beatty dropped.
And the coaching, they have a coach on staff that was more successful at Kansas than the head coach is right now.
Blowing?
Interim head coach from last year.
I was on record last year to say give that guy the job, but
so dumb like that.
But a lot of times when you promote a guy from within during the year, you get a false sense, you get a false reaction. Like, that's what happened with the Vikings when they gave Leslie Frazier the job. Where they, you know, then all of a sudden, like, everybody's inspired just to have the guy that everybody hates out of there, which was Brad Childress. And then they respond.
Right.
Colorado did that.
With
that one year. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Like, when they beat us.
When it's like, it's not really a, it's not a fair, whatever.
But still, like, how come that can't continue, you know?
Well, it can sometimes. But a lot of times it's like they're responding just because this guy is not that guy.
Yeah. But it's still, like, it bothers me when a coaching staff waves the white flag so obviously like that.
And it was so early.
Yeah.
They were in the game.
It was like a 17-point game at that point. And they were punting on the 36.
So, based off of everything you just said, I'm going to take Baylor,
Baylor
to cover the 44.
The nearly 7-touchdown spread.
Oklahoma State at West Virginia, 7-point underdog are the Cowboys. West Virginia is exactly who I thought they were. Went back and watched the tape.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly who I thought they were. So I'm going to give I don't know. I mean, I haven't really looked into this game. That's a hard place to win at. I'll take the 7 points.
I will too. And that's not a credit to West Virginia. I think that's a discredit to Oklahoma State, who has gotten monumentally lucky in the past 2 weeks.
I'm starting to see what you've been preaching to me.
They're different on the road.
Yeah, and
I don't.
I wasn't really blown away by their win against Texas.
Yeah, I don't trust a Mike Gundy team. I just don't. So I'm going to take. I'll take West Virginia. I think it's going to be a couple touchdown lead, but it's one of those, like, it's really, really close, and then they score a touchdown, and then Oklahoma State, like, throws, like, a pick six or, like, a fumble touchdown. Something like, I think I'll take them to cover, but it's going to be a really close 14-point game.
The Vampire is hosting Texas Christian University.
What's the line?
Saturday. 9 points, TCU.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I was going to say don't expect a line that's in double digits.
So I went 7-1 on our picks last week.
Mm-hmm.
One miss.
I think it was 6-2.
Vampire.
Damn, Bill Snyder.
I can't outsmart the Vampire. It doesn't. I mean, the guy, he's unbelievable.
Bloom called it, though.
Oh, yeah. Bloom nailed it.
Like, it's the classic Vampire game.
It wasn't vintage Vampire. I don't know. I'm not going to give any insight on this because I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like TCU is really, really good, but everybody struggles in Manhattan with that up-tempo because they do, you know, like I talked about earlier in the podcast, they do such a good job of keeping the ball that you subconsciously feel like you have to score a touchdown in every drive because you're not going to get another drive for 9 minutes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know what
you mean. So, like, I think, I don't know, I feel like this could be a, remember, okay, so remember when Robert Griffin came there? I think they had to come back from behind in order for Baylor to win. They had to come from behind like 10 points. I mean, granted, yeah, that's Colin Klein, but still, I don't know. That's a tough game.
I kind of feel like TCU's rolling now.
And they got their defensive end.
Yeah,
their Keystone Light back.
I kind of feel like TCU is a different team than we were discussing a couple weeks ago.
We'll see. This would be a good test.
This
for
is
them.
A good test.
Yeah. Texas is terrible. I mean,
they are terrible, but like TCU's offense is now, I mean, it's
hashtag beast mode.
Yeah, it's kind of what we thought it would be. And now that, I mean, the defense is not going to be, it's not going to be a classic Gary Patterson defense because there's just, they've lost too much. Mm-hmm. But I think they're good enough now.
Is that Freeze kid back yet? Because he took like a personal leave.
I don't think so. If he is, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. All right, Jeff, good stuff.
Gracias, senor.
Appreciate it as always. You, what are you doing this weekend?
I don't know. I don't know where we're watching the game, but we are watching the game somewhere. And then I have the 6:30 show pretty soon afterwards on ABC5, the Cy-Hawk Rewind with John Schaefer. So don't know what I'm doing to watch the game.
Hawks, Illinois. That ought to be a snoozer.
Ugh. Ugh. That's going to be like a 28-3.
Yeah, that's your classic like Big Ten beatdown of.
The only reason that isn't the case is because it's a huge trap game opportunity for Iowa.
Yeah,
because it's sandwiched between Wisconsin and Northwestern.
Absolutely is. You're right there.
But I don't think Illinois is good enough to capitalize.
I don't think they've got the talent to go in,
especially
there
on the road. If it was in Champaign, it'd be a lot different, and there'd be a shot for Illinois to.
Did you watch Illinois Nebraska?
No, I was watching. I had
pulling teeth.
I was watching a dog poop on a grass and just watching my lawn grow.
Really? That made me sad. Honestly, made me sad.
People are like, Big Ten homers are like mad when people like pick on the Big Ten. Like, have you watched that? Have you watched Big Ten football?
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, there are certain respectable teams.
They've got some nice teams.
Iowa is pretty good.
Yeah.
Wisconsin,
no question,
is not bad.
No. Nope.
Northwestern is pretty good. Ohio State and Michigan State, pretty good.
Yeah.
Indiana, they're
all right.
They're above average.
Yeah.
I would say outside of that, there's no one else that comes to – Michigan is good. Michigan's pretty good, too, with Harbaugh.
Yeah.
But outside of those, say, six teams, there's no one else that I can look at and go – well, that's a pretty good football team. That's an okay football team.
Nebraska, they're all just bad.
Purdue, Maryland, Illinois. I mean, they're not – that's Kansas and Kansas and Kansas and Kansas.
Well, I think they're all better than Kansas.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. Like,
yeah, I know.
Like every – like the Big Ten – or the Big 12 has what you would consider like fluff wins. Like last year and the year prior, Iowa State and Kansas. I would say you take Iowa State out of that bin and you put them in like that Texas Tech category where they're it'll be a tough out. You can't just automatically chalk it up as a win. The Big Ten has multiple Kansases this year now where you see them on the schedule and you're like, win, win, win.
That game made me sad especially just because I just remember when Nebraska, like where I grew up and when I grew up.
And that was the Crouch years.
Dude, it was when they were winning national titles and stuff too. I mean, I remember I was like 10, 12 years old when Tommy Frazier was running wild. And then the Crouch years. And like it was just always such a big deal. And I, as much as I hated them, it was still fun because it was an hour and a half away. You know what I mean? And you hated them because they were good, right?
Yeah.
You hated them because they were whooping your ass all the time. And like Jared Stansberry on the seniors podcast that he and Rob do, Jared's a lifelong Nebraska fan. His family was, and I don't even make fun of him for it because I feel sorry for the kid. But like it's to the point now where Nebraska loses and nobody's surprised.
Which is what's also fun is how much do you think Bo Pelini is just laughing his butt off every single week?
That and, man, the Mike Riley deal, I like Mike Riley. I'm rooting for him. Still one of the most mysterious hires I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I questioned it at the time. This is not a hindsight deal for me. The day he was hired, I was like, what?
Who do you think they should have gone after?
Oh, I don't necessarily. Well, honestly, I would have gone after Scott Frost. I would have done. To me, because then you've got a Hoiberg type situation where even if Scott Frost comes in and starts 1-4 or whatever, it's still Scott freaking Frost, and the fan base is still, well, he's one of ours.
Yeah,
he's going to bring an exciting brand. Like, he's probably doing a lot of the Tom Herman type stuff. Like, it's young, it's fresh.
Do you think that you and Ross called it when Charlie Strong got hired, that he was hired to be fired? You
correct.
Called that, and that's I mean, you've seen it. It's absolutely true. There's not a lot of support for that program. Now, do you think that Riley is in a similar situation to hired to be fired so Frost can have a few more years under his belt of coaching?
I don't know. It's an intriguing theory. I would say no. The only reason I would say no is because I felt like what they did with Riley was a major reach to find the next Tom Osborne. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I felt like they were hell-bent on getting the polar opposite of Bo Pelini.
And they got him.
They got him.
Now you're one.
I feel like, do you know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah.
Like, Mike Riley, like demeanor-wise,
quiet,
he
nice
is
guy.
Tom Osborne, demeanor-wise.
Yeah.
And he's the total opposite of Bo Pelini. And they needed a guy who, but like my ideal, if you need to get boosters excited or whatever, who better than Scott Frost?
Yeah.
I mean,
no,
Jesus.
In my opinion, it's going to be someone like Scott Frost. Not someone like Scott Frost. Scott Frost is going to be the coach at Nebraska within 3 years. Because I don't think Mike Riley is going to have enough recruiting juice to pull people away from Ohio State, from Michigan State, and the Big Ten country. Because Nebraska, in the Osborne years, they were winning recruiting battles against Shem Beckler, against Woody Hayes. They're winning recruiting battles in the Big Ten or back in the Big 12 in that time. But in the region, there was no one else that was doing it that well outside of Hayden Fry,
yeah,
who's even kind of close.
Why not? You know what I'd do if I were in Nebraska? For real, this a little bit of a radical. I would go after Paul Johnson.
Bring back the wing tee.
Why not?
Discipline.
Why not?
Yeah. Or
Pat Fitzgerald.
Ken Niumatalolo.
Who's that?
Coach at Navy.
Oh, yeah. He's really good. Yeah.
Niumatalolo.
I wouldn't necessarily him just because he doesn't have a big-time track record like Paul Johnson does. I'm obsessed with Paul Johnson, if you can't tell. I wanted Iowa State to hire him when they hired Chizik. I would look into Paul Johnson and Pat Fitzgerald.
I don't know if Fitzgerald would leave.
If you offered him enough money, he might.
True.
In a prestige program like that. Although the prestige with Nebraska is really not there anymore.
No. And if you're going to recruit dudes that you just want like hard workers, you want hard working smart guys, Northwestern, you can say, hey, look at this school. I can get you into this school. If Pat Fitzgerald were to come to me when I was in high school and say, I can get you into Northwestern if you walk on, I would be like, okay, that's the best school in the region. Northwestern is the Harvard of the Midwest. I would take a walk-on offer to Northwestern simply to get to that school.
I didn't get into it.
You didn't get into Northwestern?
No.
I didn't apply to Northwestern, but
I did. I got into Missouri.
Woohoo!
Well, I was just the top journalism programs.
Oh.
The top two, and then Syracuse. I didn't apply to Syracuse, though.
Yeah. And then you went
I got into Missouri.
The Greenlee School.
Yeah, I opted for the Iowa State University.
It's just a...
Instead.
Yeah. I don't know.
Northwestern said, hey, thanks, but no thanks for your application. We appreciate your interest, but we've declined to accept you.
It's like I was getting like half-heartedly recruited by Harvard, like my junior year. Junior year-ish, but it was like the stock letters they send to like 10,000 people, you know, throughout the year. Like, it's not like, it wasn't like a handwritten note by the coach. Like, I never got a call from anybody. And then I'm thinking like, man, that would be so cool. That'd be so cool to play football at Harvard. And then like
it would be cool.
And then like Northwestern or like a Stanford, like that, I would love to play at Stanford. I would fit in at Stanford football wise. Anyway, but like you look at that and you're like, man, that would be so awesome if I could go there. And then you look at like how much it would cost if you didn't get a scholarship, and you're like, $37,000 a year.
That's why I'm good.
I'll
looked one time at Missouri, and I'm like, no thanks.
You don't get reciprocity for Iowa.
Not there. You do like Northwest Missouri State,
mm-hmm.
but not
Doesn't Nebraska not give reciprocity to Iowa?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they don't.
I don't think so. I have friends who went there, and
they get like reciprocity to South Dakota.
They're all in major debt.
Yeah, which is dumb. It's not good enough of a school for you to leave the state when you have three really high quality public education systems. UNI, Iowa, and Iowa State.
That's why I like wasn't really. I kind of was just challenging myself to see if I could get into some of these places.
Yeah.
But I mean the amount of debt that for a journalism salary.
Right.
Like it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And Iowa State's a good school. Iowa's a good school. UNI is a good school. Yeah. If you are just looking for an education, no reason to leave the state.
Anyways, Nebraska-Wisconsin's interesting this weekend. Somebody's going to be 0-2 in the Big Ten.
And somebody's fan base is going to call for somebody's head. Imagine if
Paul Christ, I don't think, is a very good coach either.
Imagine if Nebraska loses this game by like 25.
Whew.
Mike Riley is going to be like a one and done, you know?
The problem is you're probably right. Because the fans over there just won't. I wanted to tweet the other day, and I didn't do it because I didn't want to come off as trolling, but I think there's some simple irony as to what's going on right now. I wanted to tweet, hey, Nebraska should try to hire Frank Solich back. People would take it as trolling. It's not, but it's kind of the point of, well, this is the same program that hired a guy after going, what, 9-3?
Twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at you now.
Look what you want. What is it, Icarus? Icarus, you're flying too close to the sun. You get any closer, you're going to fall down.
I've never heard that before. You've
never heard the story of Icarus?
No.
It's an old Greek.
No, I don't.
It's an old Greek tale. This guy made wings out of wax and feathers, and him and his father were flying like they. It was just
a
mythical
tale. The sun will
burn
you up.
So if you're flying low to the ground, it's cool and you can continue to fly, and you're doing something that no one's ever done in flying. Well, all of a sudden you get greedy. You try and fly too close to the sun. The sun melts the wax, and you fall down. You're no longer flying.
Huh.
Nebraska is Icarus.
That's a good way to end today's podcast.
Greek mythology.
Greek mythology with Jeff Woody. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks to the Iowa Clinic Men's Center, iemenscenter.com. We'll be back next week with more. So long.